TNT Radio wants to know what you really think. From COVID-19, the Ukraine conflict, the persecution of Julian Assange, corrupt government, the WEF, digital IDs and digital currency, the Great Reset, the disassembling of the West, and the destruction of the world as we once knew it. Your opinion matters. It's time to get on our soapbox and tell us what you really think at TNTRadio.live. Upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's soapbox. Lighting the fuse for freedom. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
This is the sound of confidence soaring.
Our mission is to educate, inspire, and honor.
This is the sound of honor roaring.
We should never, never forget those that gave their lives.
This is the sound of a generation rising above.
337 for Bravo Fox Papa.
We want to be involved in the education of young people so that they can take our aircraft and the stories that our pilots tell and realize their own dreams.
The Commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow.
Your future and how you live your life is dependent on how you think.
You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org right now.
James Freeman on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Good morning if you're in the UK. Good afternoon or good evening if you live elsewhere in the world. It is Friday, the 3rd of February, 2023, and it's the end of another great week, and things are definitely hotting up on the global stage. If you haven't seen the latest Project Veritas video, then I would highly recommend you go over and check it out on Twitter. Just type in hashtag fertility, spelt with a PF, to assimilate with Pfizer. And if you haven't seen it yet, it's basically a carry-on of the video interview with the director of research at Pfizer. And in this video, he talks about the fact that Pfizer is aware of the problems being caused by its mRNA vaccines to women's menstrual cycles. And he admits that Pfizer doesn't know why this is happening, but that it shouldn't be interacting with hormonal systems. Now, if this isn't the nail in the coffin for Pfizer, then I don't know what it is. It's time that we withdrew these dangerous mRNA vaccines. If Pfizer itself is aware of these problems and it doesn't know why it's happening, then we really, really need to take these dangerous experimental products off the market. Right, now it is Roundup Friday with Kerry Murray and Catherine McBride. So first up, I have Kerry. So Kerry is a regular on the show. He's a founder and head of the United Free Press. And we'll be talking about Nicola Sturgeon and her crusade to give rapist biological men places in women's prisons just because they identify as women. We'll be talking about new studies that suggest egg yolks protect against COVID-19 and the fact that we're suspiciously seeing a shortage of eggs in the US and Europe. And we'll also be talking about those lucky Tory beneficiaries sailing around the Med in their yachts paid for with contracts for dodgy PPE. Now, second up, I have our favourite economist, Catherine McBride. So Catherine is a free market economist. She's a member of the Institute for Economic Affairs and the Centre for Brexit Policy. And she also advises the UK government on trade. We'll be talking about dodgy claims that the UK economy is $100 billion down a year because of it leaving the EU. We'll be talking about those oil company profits after Shell announced its end of year results yesterday. And we'll also be talking about Jeremy Hunt, claiming that the UK government doesn't need to drop taxes anymore because the government is going to halve inflation instead. Okay, now in the second hour, I will have Gunnar Beck on the line. So Gunnar is a German member of the European Parliament. He's an academic, a lawyer, and he's also a member of the AFD party, and he's president of the Identity and Democracy Group. We'll be talking about the economic situation between the EU and the UK. We'll be talking about the future of the EU and current plans for further integration of EU states. I also want to hear more about EU elected members and all of this corruption. Also, I'd love to hear Gunnar's position on the EU and Ukraine, and also the common EU response to COVID-19. Right, okay. Now, before we go over to DD Denslow for one of the big headlines of the day, I want to highlight some really good news I heard yesterday from the States. Now, I've interviewed Dr. Peter McCullough a couple of times now. He is an incredibly knowledgeable doctor and a world-leading cardiologist. When he speaks on a topic, he literally backs every word with studies in the peer-reviewed medical literature. And like many doctors, Peter has suffered from heavy censorship. And he's also got accused of spreading misinformation after appearing on the Joe Rogan Experience. Now, 2 years ago, he was sued by a former employer as they claimed he had brought their name into disrepute. Well, I'd just like to say congratulations to Dr. Peter McCullough, because yesterday we found out that the case against him has been dismissed and everything has been thrown out. He told reporters at the Daily Wire that my analysis and conclusions have been accurate, consistent, and have always been my own, not those of any institution. So this is great news and a huge win for free speech. Well done, Peter. Right, now at TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast 24/7 online globally, so no matter what, we've got it covered on TNT Radio. Right, now stick with me, because joining me in a second will be DD Denslow to talk about one of the big stories of the day. My name is James Freeman, and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.
All talk, all the time.
I like the conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Right then. I will be talking about this story, interesting, in a minute, Darren, with Catherine McBride, because she's got an opinion on this. So Brexit costs UK over $124 billion annually. What's this about, Darren?
This is a Bloomberg report, so we can take it maybe with a pinch of salt, because it is coming
from an
establishment mouthpiece. But you do have some guests coming up that might be quite interested in this story. The UK economy is continuing to lose billions annually following Brexit, according to an analysis by Bloomberg Economics released on Tuesday. The report states that the British economy is currently 4% smaller than it might have been had the country stayed within the bloc, and has been losing roughly £100 billion a year after its exit from the EU in 2020. Did the UK commit an act of economic self-harm when it voted to leave the EU in 2016? The evidence so far still suggests it did. The main takeaway is that the rupture from the single market may have impacted the British economy faster than we or most other forecasters expected. Actually, some of the forecasters expected the UK now to be a desolate wasteland with Godzilla roaming the land after the Brexit vote, and that hasn't happened. The analysts say that the UK's economic performance started to differ from that of the rest of the G7 countries after the 2016 Brexit referendum. They say this was caused by a drop in business investment, as companies have been cautious with spending due to uncertainty about the future outside the single market. According to calculations, the UK's business investment currently stands at about 9% of GDP against the G7 average of 13%. Now, I could continue with this article. It places a lot of doom and gloom on the UK economy with regards to Brexit, and only Brexit. And actually, in this particular article, There is no mention of the fact that we've just had a three-year, two-year lockdown because of COVID, James.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about too much of the detail on this because, like I said, I've got Catherine McBride on just after the bottom of the hour to talk about this. But, hey, look, I think we can talk about Bloomberg and the mainstream media. What a load of absolute nonsense. I mean, for number one, you know, they're making this about Brexit and then comparing us to countries which have nothing to do with the European Union. That's all I'm going to say about this, because like I said, we'll unpack that at the bottom of the hour with Catherine McBride. But yeah, Bloomberg, yeah, not one of my favorite papers. In fact, all of them, the mainstream media. I used to read the Times and all of the big papers every morning, along with the alternative media. To be honest with you, these days, not so much. I have the odd glance just to see what they're talking about and what rubbish they're making up, but literally just that. Right. Okay. Thank you very much, Darren. You'll join me in the second hour for another big story. So yep. Stick with me, because in a moment I will have Kerry Murray from the United Free Press with me. So don't go anywhere.
TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
What was the straw that broke the back, if you will, that that led the Catholic League to say, we really have to do a documentary and expose what Disney has become?
Any good, honest, hardworking American would agree with this notion that children in kindergarten through third grade should not be lectured on, should not be, frankly, indoctrinated by the agenda of transgenderism, the whole woke transgender ideology. That is no place in kindergarten. They shouldn't be learning about sexual orientation, gender identity. And then suddenly Disney decides to weigh into that and say, you know what, actually, we've got a lot of employees here that are upset that you can't groom the kids anymore. So we're going to do everything in our power to repeal this law, go after the lawmakers that are trying to protect the kids, because that's what the woke priests at Disney want to see these days.
Steve Malzberg on TNT Radio.
In times of fear, World Vision has been there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've stood with kids and families during some of the world's hardest times. Through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and support, helping rebuild lives, and empowering entire communities to lift themselves out of poverty. And we're doing the same today. Because rising to these challenges is in our DNA. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, at home and abroad, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
Info at your beck and call.
The stunning developments.
Stay tuned for updates.
Just tell your smart device to play TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Freeman Report with me, James Freeman. It is Friday, the 3rd of February, and it is Friday roundup of the news. On the line, I have Kerry Murray. Hello, Kerry.
Good morning. Good morning.
How are you this beautiful Friday morning, Kerry?
Yes, I'm well. This beautiful grey and overcast day in England. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. I could do with some sun.
Yeah, exactly. We've just been chatting in the chat, and I was saying that I desperately need some sun. Now, to anybody sat in Australia listening to this, I hate you because I know it's your summer at the moment. But yeah, it is grey and overcast outside. But we have some fantastic stories to talk about, don't we, Kerry? So let's start off with Nicola Sturgeon. Tell me all about what's going on with her, Kerry.
Oh, gosh. Well, Nicola, once again, she finds herself in fairly hot water, this time possibly on the boil, actually. I think we could probably say at this point. She's been, despite her recent push for legislation in Scotland to enable self-determination of individuals over their gender. She's been unable to comment on a prisoner who has, or a convicted rapist, I should say, Adam Graham, before he changed his name to Isla Bryson, as to whether he is indeed a male or a female. And so we've seen in these last couple of weeks the blockage of that passage of legislation in Scotland, which is no bad thing. But then we've also seen this man be moved from where he was located, which was in a women's prison, back into a men's prison.
Isn't this just absolutely ridiculous? I cannot believe that we're even talking about this. They're apparently now going to hold risk assessments on these things.
Yes.
But do we really need to hold a risk assessment to make the decision about whether a biological male rapist should be put in a prison with women?
Well, I think it's pretty cut and dried for me. If you're a biological male, irrespective of what wig you're wearing or what name you like to call yourself, you ought to be in a men's prison. Likewise, if you're a biological female, you ought to be in a women's prison, regardless of your crime. These are basics, aren't they?
I think they are, because I was talking about this with Di McMillan this year, this week, and she was pointing out the fact that, she gave some statistics. I forget exactly what they were, but it was statistics highlighting that the majority of women in women's prisons are actually very vulnerable. She gave some statistics on the number that had suffered domestic violence from men and all sorts of other things. So these women, surely, I mean, I know they're in prison, but they have rights of their own, don't they?
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And it's always been the case that men and women have been separated in prisons. I mean, this is for obvious reason. You may have many male perpetrators of violence towards women, etc. And, these are the types of people that are in prisons and kept away from each other for good reason. I don't know why that has changed. It seems to me that this is just another politically correct woke ideal to appease those who want to change the fundamental rules of nature to suit their whims. And it's daft. It's absolutely crazy. We've got to call it out for what it is. And it's just mental.
Yeah. And they've got some really strange laws. I think they're going down the route similar to Canada. I'm pretty sure that in Scotland, a child wants to be change their gender, they can do that in the school, even if their parents haven't given permission. We've obviously then, like you rightly said, we've got this new law which has been repealed because actually it conflicts with the UK wider Equalities Act. And that is, anybody can change their gender. And I think it only takes 6 months. And I think you can do it down as low as, I can't remember the exact age, but I think it's certainly under 18. It might be 16.
It was 16. 16 was being proposed with a lead. So what they've got now is this sort of lead time where you need to see, psychological professionals, and you need to speak with medical professionals, and they have to weigh in on this. And there's a 2-year waiting time. You need to be living as that person for 2 years before you can be accepted to have your gender officially changed. Now, whatever you think of that, this new act proposed self-determination for those as young as 16 with a waiting period of as little as 6 months.
Yeah, I think it's crazy. And I'm hoping that this will be the end of Nicola Sturgeon, because she really has been very, very divisive for the UK overall. And I don't think she's been a very good politician for Scots either, has she?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay, Scotland, we don't want to talk about Nicola. Yeah. Right. Okay. We'll move on from that because we don't want to talk about Nicola Sturgeon for the whole show. Okay. Kerry, what's this about eggs?
I don't know. I don't know what it is about eggs. I like eggs. I've never had a problem with eggs. I've always thought they're quite good for you. And that's probably the end of it, really. They're quite tasty in a breakfast. But now it seems that there's been the study published in PubMed showing that egg yolk antibodies may inhibit the binding of spike proteins for SARS-CoV-2. Basically saying that eat some eggs and you won't get COVID, or it's not going to be that bad.
Fantastic. That sounds brilliant. I mean, I love eggs too.
But also, the best part of the story, I think the best part of the story, sorry, I think we've got a bit of a delay here on the line, but the best part of the story for me is that we've also seen reports that eggs are causing strokes and clots.
Are they now? Are they now? Along with shoveling snow, changing your bed, apparently breathing too many times in an hour.
On a strict regime now, with a number of breaths, very specific number of breaths I'm allowed to take per day, and you can't go over that, otherwise you really up your risk.
Maybe that's why we've got a delay. Right, okay. Now, the curious thing with this is that this story is coming out not long after we hear that there's a shortage and problems with eggs. I've seen some TikToks of quite a few TikToks, actually, of people in the US claiming that their eggs, their chickens, rather, definitely the chicken before the egg, their chickens stopped laying eggs. But when they stopped feeding them their chicken feed, they started laying again. And then we've also had a massive factory producing eggs in the US, which has burnt down. We've got problems with eggs in the UK because the supermarkets aren't paying farmers enough, so they're not producing as many eggs. This is very curious, isn't it?
It is very curious. It's very, very strange. And it almost seems that there's this, it's a war on eggs. There's a war on eggs, and it seems to be coming from all sides. You know, from the feed perspective, which potentially, you know, by these accounts, it anecdotally sounds that it's stopping the chickens from laying eggs. Now, I don't know if it's the taste or whether they've put something in it which is causing them to do that. I suspect that that's the insinuation. But then you've got these reports at the same time of eggs being both good for, you know, good for COVID and bad for you at the same time. It's very, very strange.
It is. So there's no longer a war on drugs, no longer a war on terrorism. We now have a war on eggs. Brilliant. Okay. Right. Okay. This story here, I think, is going to run and run because, you know, I think there were a lot of dodgy deals done during the pandemic between the UK government and their friends and, you know, donors to the Tory party. And, you know, despite there being a lot of information on this, I don't think it really received the press that it should have. But it has got legs, and we hear now about yachts in the Med. Kerry, what's this about?
Yeah, yachts in the Med. The 10 million pound, let's call it a super yacht. I'm going to call it a super yacht because 10 million quid sounds pretty super to me. So
it's a super yacht to me. I haven't even got a yacht. So,
well, exactly. Moored in Barcelona, has belonging to Michelle Monet. Not sure how she pronounces it. I pronounce it Moan. Michelle Moan. Let's have a moan about her. Her yacht has been renamed by activists who have found this in their port in Barcelona, and they've renamed it to the Pandemic Profiteer in lovely lettering. It's fantastic if you see the clip online. It actually suits the boat very well, so they've done a cracking job on the design. Now, this, of course, is due to Michelle receiving, or Michelle's company, PPE MedPro, despite her being an underwear magnate of some sort. PPE MedPro was awarded a £200 million contract for gowns. Gowns for all those COVID patients, you know, for the medical staff to wear and protect themselves. Now, these gowns were later found to be of insufficient quality to be used. So the question is asked, of course, where did that money go? And was it given back? Because as far as I know, that's ours.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it ended up in some offshore account somewhere. But the thing with this is that, you know, going back and taking a step back to the pandemic, a lot of these contracts were given to companies that were set up literally a number of weeks before. Wasn't it Matt Hancock even gave a contract worth millions, and he's to his pub landlord. There was another guy that went and bought a whole mansion that cost him millions based upon one of these contracts. Now, the really disturbing thing about this is that I think early last year, I think it was around £8 billion worth of PPE was burnt by the British government because it was unusable. So this is just theft, isn't it, Kerry? Isn't
this
it?
This is a cash cow. I think this was seen as a cash cow early on in the proceedings, where these companies, you rightly say, were set up very quickly, very swiftly to procure PPE, which was undoubtedly procured from places like China and simply shipped and sold then under these contracts to the British government. You know, subsequently, even as you say, much of it not used and in fact discarded. You know, these contracts still remain. And you're right. I think the there's longevity in this story, because it's not just one story, it's several. And it really gets to the heart of how we need to get to the heart of, rather, how these contracts were awarded, what kinds of processes were taken, why the companies that were awarded them were awarded them, given their proximity to leading politicians. It all smells very fishy. It's clear to see that there's more to this story than meets the eye.
It is very fishy, isn't it? And I've heard allegations from politicians in the UK, they will remain anonymous, that the UK government was aware that the pandemic was going to happen in the summer of 2019. And instead of actually preparing the country for it, they started preparing all of their rich friends to set up all of these contracts and ways of making money out of the pandemic. So, as I said, I think this has got legs. So I'm sure we are going to hear more about this in the coming weeks. Right now, Kerry, obviously you're the founder and head of the United Free Press, and we've got our first meeting this weekend, haven't we, in London. What kind of things are we going to be discussing?
Absolutely. It's the first meet of the year. We try and get together every couple of months if we can, and generally just talk about how we're experiencing the news cycle, how we're experiencing the work that we're doing, exchange ideas, talk about stories, and generally plan for what the UFP can do this year and raising the profile, I think, of individual, you know, independent journalists is key to that.
Yeah, we've got some fantastic Counterspin Media now are on the Alex Jones show. Obviously, I've got this radio show, and we've got a whole load of other fantastic journalists. So if you are a journalist and you are homeless in terms of an association, then definitely head over to the United Free Press. Just type it in Google and you can sign up. It's not that expensive, is it, Kerry, for an annual
membership? No, absolutely not. Right. You can head to unitedfreepress.org and that will give you all of the information you need. You can check out who's already signed up, who our affiliates are, both here and abroad, and head straight to the membership pages to put in your request.
Fantastic. Well, listen, Kerry, I really enjoyed those stories, and thank you for your input there. I'm hoping you'll join us again in the future for some more great stories. So thank you very much. Absolutely. Have a great Friday.
Always a pleasure.
Right, okay, bye-bye. Stick with me. Bye-bye. So stick with me, because after the break, we've got our favourite economist, Catherine McBride. Don't go away.
Here's a little news flash.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boylan here with a look at your TNT headlines. The Pentagon has confirmed it's tracking what it says is a Chinese spy balloon drifting across America at high altitudes. Russia now says it has all it needs to complete its military operation in Ukraine as it pushes to secure its territory. And angry residents in South Africa have rallied against the country's largest utility company for failing to prevent widespread blackouts despite charging customers more for power.
In times of fear, World Vision has been there for the most vulnerable. For the last 70 years, we've stood with kids and families during some of the world's hardest times. Through natural disasters, war, and disease, delivering life-saving aid and support, helping rebuild lives, and empowering entire communities to lift themselves out of poverty. And we're doing the same today. Because rising to these challenges is in our DNA. And with every act of courage, faith, and love, at home and abroad, we do more than just stop the spread of fear. We replace it with hope. Learn more at worldvision.org.
Do you have an upcoming community event, rally, march, festival, or fundraiser that could do with some free publicity? TNT Radio wants to promote it for you. Simply visit the What's On Events calendar on the TNT Radio website and submit your event details, and we'll get the word out, helping you make a difference on TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Freeman Report with me, James Freeman. It is Friday, the 3rd of February, 2023, and it is Roundup Friday. On the line, I have our favourite economist, Catherine McBride. Hello, Catherine.
Hi, James. Can you hear me?
How are you today, Catherine? Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah.
Good. I'm very well. I've got lots of crazy stories in this press this week because it was the third birthday of Brexit. So we've had lots of misinformation and lots of just straight out lies, but we can stick with the misinformation if you like.
Yeah, definitely we're seeing it in droves at the moment, aren't we? And, you know, the thing for me, I'll pick you up on that. So it's the third sort of year or the third birthday of Brexit, but Brexit hasn't been delivered, has it, Catherine?
Well, there are still a lot of things that haven't changed, but there are a few things that we have changed in the fact that we are now in control. So we have the ability to change them. Unfortunately, a lot of our politicians and a lot of our public servants seem to prefer to just follow what the EU does, and they've just got out of the habit of having to think for themselves. And that's a real problem, and that will take... Probably we'll need to have a general election and get proper people in government who actually are interested in running a prosperous United Kingdom. And unfortunately, I don't think the ones we've got are interested in that at the moment. You know, it's just a job.
Yeah, I don't either. And Ben Habib made some good points. We talked about the fact that I think Rishi Sunak and Jeremy Hunt, the Prime Minister and Chancellor, are globalists. I think that probably they would like to take us back into the EU. And what Ben was saying was that the reason that we're not diverging and using these newfound freedoms is because it would make us diverge from Northern Ireland, which would make it even more difficult to go back in. Right, okay, I don't want to spend ages talking about that because we have got some stories to debunk, haven't we, Catherine? So tell me about the claims that the UK economy is losing $100 billion a year because of Brexit.
Yeah, this was the most fantastic piece of misinformation. It came out of Bloomberg, but incredibly, it was also picked up by the BBC, and no one questioned its premise, which is comparing the UK with the G7 economies. Now, first of all, they never explain where the 100 billion of lost output is, because they don't say what sector that's in, but I'm unaware of any sectors with that sort of spare capacity. But on the assumption that there is that spare capacity, why would you compare the UK with the G7? The G7 is the seven industrial countries back in 1973 when they set this up. And it is the US, Japan and Canada, who are not in the EU and never have been. France, Germany and Italy, who have always been in the EU. They are founder members. And then the UK, which arrived late in the EU and left early, thank God. Now, of those economies, the US economy dominates the G7. It is worth more than 50%. It's worth more than the rest of the G7 added together. And both the US economy and the Japanese economy, their GDPs are 66%, two-thirds of the entire GDP of the G7. So to try and pretend that the G7 has something to do with the EU is a joke. But besides that, the US economy, since the G7 started on March the 25th in 1973, the US economy, the UK economy and the Canadian economy are all about 15 times larger than they were when the G7 started, while the Japanese, German, French and Italian economies are about 10 times bigger. So the difference between the economies that are 15 times bigger and the economies that are 10 times bigger is not their membership of the EU. It is the fact that the ones who export oil and gas have done a lot better than the ones that import oil and gas. So the four economies that have not done as well are the importers. And the idea that this has something to do with Brexit is ridiculous. But then to go on and say that the UK has underperformed is to miss out the fact that one of the ways we've underperformed is that we are not exploiting our own oil and gas reserves as much as we could have. And this started in 2004. So again, this has nothing to do with Brexit. This started when Ed Miliband was in charge. He was the environment minister. And you've seen since then much less investment in developing oil and gas in the North Sea during that time. So that is the big issue. But the other thing in this article that they talk about is that how there's been lower business investment in the UK. And that is probably true, but it also has nothing to do with Brexit. One of the problems we've had is in the last 5 or 6 years, under the same stable Conservative government, we've had 3 or 4 different tax policies for corporations. And corporate tax was never an EU decision. The country has always been in control of its own corporate tax rate. That had nothing to do with the EU. The EU was in charge of VAT and the EU was in charge of import tariffs. But we've always been able to mess up our own corporate taxes all by ourselves. Had nothing to do with the EU. So to try and blame lower business investment on Brexit, when we've had Theresa May claiming she would lower taxes to 17%, and then Rishi Sunak proposing to put them up to 25, and then Truss saying she'd keep them at 19, and then Hunt saying he was going to lower them to 15, but then when he was made Chancellor, he decided he'd follow Rishi Sunak and put them up to 25, and they're getting rid of the super deductions as well. And you wonder why no one wants to invest in the UK. I mean, who would know what you're going to be charged in tax? They'd make this stuff up. And then they put windfall taxes in. So if you actually make money, they're going to tax you extra. And then the Labour Party is threatening that if you make money, they're not just going to tax you on what you're earning now. They're going to backdate it and tax you on what you earned before. So if I was an investor, I would, you know, keep the UK at a barge pole away, you know, and that has nothing to do with Brexit. And then they went on to say, the final thing on this one is they said that we had a shortage of 370,000 workers. Now, I'm going to read this number out to you, James, because it's so fantastic. By September 2022, so this figure is already almost 5 months out of date and it should be updated by the Home Office in March, 6,874,700 EU citizens had claimed settled status in the UK. And that's straight off the government website. And on another government website, the net migration, these are people coming in with visas, was 504,000. And that's to June 2022. So the idea that we are short of workers is nonsense. We are probably short of workers who are willing to work for the minimum wage, but that's because our minimum wage is too low. It's actually below the living wage. So the UK people don't want to, or they can't afford to work on that wage. And the only people
And Catherine, there's also this story, isn't there, about the 50-somethings, which the government is desperately trying to get back into the workforce because they've decided, do you know what, after the lockdown and everything, I don't want to work anymore. And a lot of them have got enough money to get by not working. So I think this is, look, I think the thing to point out is whenever you look at anything to do with the economy, it's always more complicated than the headline. And, you know, Catherine, for me, this whole, the UK is going to be the strongest, see the strongest growth in the G7 this year. I mean, I've seen them stories in the last couple of years. And then we see 6 months later that it's going to suffer the lowest growth. It's like one of those horse races. Do you remember them at the seaside piers? Those races, the physical ones with the little horses, and they would all jostle, and you know, it's a little bit like that, really. And it's a little bit like the reporting of the weather, because quite often the thing is here, obviously what they're actually reporting on is the future as well, so it's all modeling as well. So I think best to take some of these headlines with a pinch of salt is the conclusion there. Right now, okay, we're going to take a quick break, Catherine, so don't go anywhere. And after the break, we're going to be talking about these oil company profits. So don't go anywhere. We'll be back after
Give
this
me
short
a minute
break.
With TNT Radio's Steve Malzberg.
19-year-old Jacob Kersey was a police officer with the Port Wentworth Police Department in the state of Georgia. I say was because he quit that job. The Daily Signal reports that on January 2nd, Kersey posted this on Facebook. God designed marriage. Marriage refers to Christ and the church. That's why there is no such thing as homosexual marriage. The next day, Kersey said he received a phone call from his superior who told him that he needed to take it down. Kersey said no, and he was told that if he didn't do it, he could be fired. He was placed on administrative leave. Then told he was back on the force, but could no longer post about his views on marriage. So, he quit. Kersey said the police chief told him that his Facebook post was the same thing as saying the N-word and F all those homosexuals. That, of course, is ridiculous. It looks like the big losers here are the people of Port Wentworth, Georgia, who lost a kid who could have gone on to become a great cop. But that's political correctness. Thanks for giving me a minute. I'm Steve Malzberg for TNT Radio.
There's something about living here. The skies that change right before your eyes. And people that look out for each other. A community that does its bit to plan and prepare to keep everyone safe. Because bushfire is just a part of life here. We've been through it before, and we'll get through it again. We live with bushfire, so we live bushfire ready.
The Freeman Report on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back with me, James Freeman. This is Roundup Friday, where we talk about all of the news of the week. And on the line, we have our favourite economist, Catherine McBride. Now, before the break, we were talking about this ridiculous story that the UK economy is losing $100 billion a year from Brexit. I love having Catherine on the show because she's able to talk about this in detail and debunk all of this nonsense. Now, Catherine, I do have to put my hand up. We did talk about these oil company profits on the show this week, and I was pretty damning. But after speaking with you yesterday, I think I need to I certainly need to rethink my approach. Tell us a little bit about these stories, about all these bumper profits, Catherine.
Well, it's actually great because the companies are not responsible for starting the war between Russia and the Ukraine, which has pushed the oil price up. So, you know, they are in the right place at the right time, if you like. And that's good that they're making money now, because they haven't always been in the right place at the right time. And as you're probably aware, anyone is aware, there's a war in the West against people who produce hydrocarbon fuels, even though our economy still runs on them. And we desperately need oil and gas. And the countries that have not had enough oil and gas, like Germany, have been in real trouble last year. So we're lucky these countries, the companies are still in business. And if you look at the Shell earnings, which you can find on any website, you can see that though they're making money now, they were losing money in 2020. They were also not doing very well in 2015. and before that in 2010. And it goes, you know, all commodity businesses, you make a lot of money in good times and you can lose money when there's a recession, or you can lose money when the oil price collapses, or you can lose money in a whole lot of other reasons. And you have to let all companies in this sort of business take the good with the bad, because the extra profits they're making now will be used to cover their losses when, you know, something goes wrong. Because how many headlines did you read in 2020 when the oil price collapsed and oil was being produced at a loss to the companies? I don't remember seeing any, but the companies kept going because they knew that it would come back eventually. And they'd made money in the years before that, in 2018 and 2019. So you were being very selective by worrying about them when they make money and ignoring them when they don't. And that's, you know, it's kind of, you can't run a company like that. All companies have good days and they have bad days. And 2019, 2020 was not so great. And the 2022 has been very good for them, but already the oil price is coming down. And the figures that they're talking about now is the year ending in September 2022. So it sort of captured the summer peak of the oil and gas crisis in Europe, when they were paying ridiculous prices because they were terrified of Russia cutting them off. But now we're seeing that the oil price is way back to where it was in 2019, as is the gas price. And that is going to mean that their next lot of profits are not going to be so high. So this idea that we should all complain when they're making money, it's like they're a company. They're meant to make money. People only invest, you know, in the previous sector, people were carrying on about lower investment in the UK. Well, this is one of the reasons why people don't want to invest in UK companies, because we have a crazy government that thinks companies aren't meant to make money. Well, companies are meant to make money. That's what they do. That's why they're there. If they were making a loss each year, we'd have to subsidize them, or we'd have to find another way to live without oil and gas, which so far we haven't been able to do.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's worth revisiting what actually happened back in 2020. I mean, I remember the oil price being down at $20 for quite some time. And in fact, even at one point, and I know there is a distribution supply chain, so this might not have affected the actual companies themselves, but at one point, the actual spot price for oil went negative. So they really did have a torrid time. And if you look at the shares in companies like Shell and BP, they really did hit rock bottom over the last couple of years. And, you know, I was looking at the Shell price yesterday and the share price, and it's still not back up to where it was pre-pandemic. So I think you're right. I think we do need to take a much, much longer view. But, you know, again,
can I add one more thing, James?
Yeah, of course, because you can.
I'm also hearing this in the press where people are saying, oh, and, you know, they're ripping us off because the petrol price hasn't come down as much as the oil price. It's still quite high. But what they're forgetting is that 52p of the price you pay at the petrol pump is government tax, which they call the fuel duty. And then on top of that, as well as on top of the price of oil, is a 5% VAT, so that you're technically only paying the oil company about a pound for the petrol you buy at the moment, and the rest of that is going straight to the government. So it's also quite disingenuous for the government to be complaining about the profits they're making and wanting to put a windfall tax on them, when the biggest part of the amount we're paying at the petrol pump, not the biggest, but a very big part of the price we're paying at the petrol pump, is going straight to the government. You know, it's ridiculous, you know,
yeah,
how much the government's
taking
off.
I totally agree. Yeah, exactly. And I think the reason the government do this is because it's a welcome distraction from the spotlight being on them, isn't it, in these hard economic times. Right, okay. Now, the final story we're going to talk about today is from Jeremy Hunt, and I'll make sure I say that properly. Now, Jeremy is saying that we don't need to to have any tax cuts at the moment because the government will halve inflation. I think to start off with, Catherine, it's worth, I think, picking up on that comparison. Is halving inflation the same as tax cuts?
Well, it's that's probably a longer story, but no, it's not, because it's even inflation doesn't hit everything in the same manner. Obviously, we've had much higher oil inflation, and that affects a lot of physical good production, but it doesn't affect other areas of the economy as much. But the interesting thing about Hunt's comments about inflation and tax is he is planning to put our tax, our corporate taxes back up to 25% from 19%. Now, I'm just going to run through some figures here. I've kept it very simple. But if you're a company and you're selling 1,000 widgets and you're charging, you're getting a profit of £100 per thing you sell, you're making £100,000 a year, your tax at 19% means you're left with £81,000. Now, if you put the tax rate up to 25%, you'll only be left with $75,000, which you may be happy with. But if you're not happy with it, the only way you can get back to the $81,000 after tax income would be to put your price up from £100 a widget to £108 a widget. So you'd have to increase your price. That's an 8% inflation just to make up for the fact that your tax has gone from 19% to 25%, and then you'll get back to your $81,000 a year. Now, and that's assuming that none of your input costs have done the same thing, because in all likelihood, in most manufacturing, they are buying in stuff from somewhere else. And if those guys do the same calculation and go, oh, the tax man is taking more of our profits, therefore I will put my prices up, then this is going to multiply many times. And so Hunt's very disingenuous claim that somehow or other putting taxes up is going to lower inflation is such a nonsense. It's unreal. The only way it could lower inflation is if all the UK companies move to Ireland, where corporate taxes are only 12%, and then they'd be able to actually lower their prices and still make the same amount of money. But in most likelihoods, they won't lower their price and they'll just make a higher return because they only have to pay 12% tax in Ireland. So I think Jeremy Hunt is one of the people Sunak was referring to when he said everyone had to study maths till A-level. And I think the person he was looking at when he said that must have been his chancellor, because it is quite extraordinary that he somehow thinks putting corporate taxes up is going to lower inflation. That's one thing it's most definitely not going to do. And I can't believe that that simple calculation he can't do in his head, let alone on an Excel spreadsheet. So that's my thing on tax cuts. I think he doesn't even have to tax cut the tax. He just has to keep them the same. What our government really needs in the tax department is a little bit of continuity. Most companies just want to know that if they invest here and if they build up a business here, that the tax is not going to change much. They want to know that they're not going to be retrospectively taxed on a windfall basis because someone thought they made too much money. They want to know that the plant and equipment they invest in can still be deducted next year as well as this year. You know, businesses just want some continuity. And instead, we've got these people running the country in such a bad way. I mean, I just can't think of anything positive they're doing at the moment, except maybe standing up to Nicola Sturgeon and her crazy crazy problem with what is a woman. But other than that, it's pretty pathetic, really.
It is, isn't it? Because, I mean, I guess the other way, people listening to this might be thinking, the other way to bring that profit back up to 100,000 or the 81,000 after tax would be to increase volume. But, you know, factoring, it's not always easy, depends what you manufacture, just to turn the tap on and off. Obviously, you've got all of the inputs. If you're going to produce more stuff, then you need to get more inputs. And obviously, that might incur higher prices. And also, you've got to source this stuff from somewhere in the world. And then also, factories quite often have production capacity, whether that's led by the number of workers they've got or the number of machines producing stuff. So this is really complicated stuff. And like you said, what manufacturers and producers really want is stability so that they can plan ahead. Right. Okay, Catherine, that was fantastic. Thank you so much again for debunking a lot of the nonsense we see in our headlines. I hope you have a fantastic Friday and weekend. Thank you so much. I hope you'll come back again and debunk more stories with us, Catherine.
Unfortunately, I think I'm going to have more stories every week for you, James, because this our press is just never going to tell the truth. So someone else has got to do it. Thank you.
Well, fantastic. Have a great weekend and thank you very much. Right, okay. After the break, we have Gunnar Beck. So Gunnar is a member of the European Parliament and we've got a lot to talk about. So don't go anywhere. My name is James Freeman and this is the Freeman Report on TNT Radio.